Welcome into the NHL At The Rink podcast. Dan Rosen here, and as always, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, we got a big show today. Lots of news should be coming our way soon, and we've got the man, we're going to bring him in soon, that can lay it all out for us. Bill Daly, the NHL's deputy commissioner, will be joining us.
Yeah, the day after the NHL Board of Governors meeting, which was on Thursday, and the PA had a meeting on that day too. Not a lot of news coming out, a lot of speculation. So it's great to have Bill on, and a great way to jump back into the podcast. It's been a minute, as the kids say.
Right.
So you know, it's right back into it. No training camp for us. We're right back at it.
We'll get to Bill in a second here, but before that, we do want to tell you that we will have Brandon Saad, new member of the Colorado Avalanche, joining us, traded from the Chicago Blackhawks last month, so he'll be joining us. But Sean, everybody loves to hear from you, and I love to hear from you, but let's wait to hear from you again until after we hear from Bill Daly, because we've got Bill Daly now, and Bill, thank you so much for jumping on with us. Hope everybody is safe and well. And really, the floor is yours here, Bill. Please just lay it out for us. Where do we stand at this point with the return to play for next season?
So, look, there's been a lot of discussion, both internally, but also with the Players Association and the players over the last little while. You know, it continues to be our hope and our current intention that, you know, we're dropping the puck on a regular season as early as January 1st. That continues to be our goal. You know, obviously we still have things to finalize between now and then. And there are some open issues that need to be resolved, most significantly, which, you know, is how long the season's going to be, you know, how you're going to play it. You know, what the divisional alignments look like. There's still, you know, a lot to be decided. Having said that, you know, we understand, I think what I can say with some confidence and certainty is that we do think we understand, you know, all the different options, their pros and their cons. And, you know, we think that, you know, when the time is right and we're in a position to make decisions, that we can put those pieces all in place where they go and move forward with a plan. So hopefully that's sooner rather than later. I can't tell you exactly when it is, but hopefully it's in the very near future.
Is the uncertainty for you the most difficult part? I mean, you think about just this week as numbers start to rise again and people focus on that, but also, you know, the positive news that the vaccine came out and how that might impact what the NHL is able to do. Is the fact that it seems to change on an almost daily basis make this even more difficult than it could be?
Absolutely. Yes. And the easy answer to that is absolutely yes. And it's frustrating at times. Having said that, it's something that I think, you know, everybody has to deal with, not only in our industry, but really across, you know, all industries in the world. So, you know, there is a lot of uncertainty. There are a lot more questions than answers. You know, you just have to kind of try to navigate those waters and make the best decisions you can in an uncertain environment. You know, the fact that, you know, the COVID, experience across this country and in Canada as well, is starting to spike, and will continue to spike, in the foreseeable future is not a helpful fact. But you're also right that, you know, some of the good news we got on potential vaccines and the rollout of those vaccines was positive news. So you got to take the good with the bad and as I said, make decisions when you need to make them. And hopefully, you know, that they're you have some success with the decisions you make.
And Bill, all that likely plays into, you know, my question here, but we've heard about playing in pods or hub cities, not like the playoffs, but, you know, so a makeshift of those, or playing in market, playing in arena. So I know there's various different options that you guys are looking at. I wonder if you could take us through the pros and cons of, you know, the pods versus playing in arena. And is there a favorite at this point in terms of that?
I'd say we are progressing down that path. I would say, while I don't know this scientifically, At this point in time, I think if possible to do so, I think our clubs would much prefer to play in their home buildings, even if that means not before fans. Having said that, you know, in some markets, I don't even, you know, if we drop the puck tomorrow night, I'm not certain that all markets could accommodate a game just by local regulation and health restrictions. So, you know, and that changes to Sean's point on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, the restrictions that come into effect, the restrictions that go out of effect. And that, you know, presents its own challenge on just staying on top of what all the conditions are. So, you know, I think the hub city concept is meant to address the situation where it's fans are generally not allowed in buildings. It perhaps presents a little more safe, a little safer environment because it's a little more sheltered, a little more isolated. Certainly not to the extent of the bubble cities of Edmonton and Toronto, but you know, there'd be more, you know, I think more limited interactions with the outside world. You'd obviously want to put those hub cities in places that are experiencing, you know, positive experiences on the COVID side. You'd set up, you know, some dedicated space for and restaurants for the players. You know, without kind of the secure perimeters that we had in the bubble cities. But, you know, that would be the benefit, I guess, of hub cities. You would be in a situation where teams would travel in, play, you know, a bunch of games over a 2-week time period, and then be able to go home and spend time with their families and at their own local practice facilities for a week, and then kind of cycle through a season that way. So those are, you know, those are the options that are being considered. They both have their pros and cons. I certainly could envision a situation where we start with one model and shift to another model. I certainly could envision a situation where we start with one model and by necessity, at least for some clubs, have to move to another model. We have to build in flexibility for, you know, the hiccups that we expect will come along and have to expect will come along with potential COVID positives and contact tracing requirements. You know, some of the difficulties that baseball went through and some of the difficulties that the NFL is currently dealing with. You know, how do we address those situations in the context of our own schedule? So those are all the things that we're working on, and those are all the things that keep us all up at night as we try to figure this out.
You kind of led into the question I was going to ask you. When we started this with the bubbles, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Soccer were kind of blazing a new trail, and everybody that came after that followed it. How much have you been able to pick the brains of the people that followed it and I guess mainly in pro football and college football about what can happen and, you know, adding to that knowledge base that you already have? Has there been a lot of conversations with those sports?
Yeah, we continue to have conversations, and, you know, those conversations have gone on regularly from the start of this thing way back in March. So, you know, it's not like we have a weekly scheduled call or a daily scheduled call or anything like that, but whenever we have any questions, we certainly get together. Our medical experts do actually meet regularly and compare notes on a regular basis. I think I've learned, you know, I think I've learned a lot. I think we've learned a lot from the experiences that baseball had and the experiences the NFL had. And quite frankly, some of the experiences that are going on across the world in the hockey universe, you know, what the European leagues are doing, what's going on with the junior leagues in North America, what's going on in college hockey in North America with the announcement yesterday that the Ivy Leagues won't be participating in winter sports this season. So, you know, there's a lot of information out there, a lot of good information that you can learn from and make adjustments to policies and protocols on the basis of. And you know, we want to absorb as much of that information as we can and put it to good use for sure.
Bill, last one, and it's a two-parter. quickies. First off, if it is January 1st or whenever the date is, when do the players need to know so they can begin reporting to wherever training camps are going to be? So what's that timeline? And there's a border issue. So what's the reality of an all-Canadian division here?
I would say players need to know as soon as possible. we know there's some urgency here. There's some urgency, you know, for making decisions, having, you know, and while we want to drop the puck on January 1st, we also recognize that we're not going to rush into a bad decision just to make it. So, you know, whether that January 1st can be a little later, we certainly have flexibility to move it later. You know, we are in regular communication with the clubs. I think the players have and the clubs have a fairly good understanding of what a January 1st opening would require. We've talked about a 2-week training camp. We've talked about additional time for the teams who didn't get to return to play. We've talked about the possibility of clubs having a conditioning camp in advance of those mandatory training camps. You know, so realistically, you know, I think if we're going to start in the first part of January, we're going, you know, mandatory training camps are going to have to start the middle part of December. And in some of our markets, there continue to be quarantine requirements associated with players coming into town. So you factor those in and you back it up from there. So, you know, I would, ultimately concur with the conclusion that time's getting short.
Great, Bill. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you're busy today in the wake of everything we just discussed, so we're going to let you get back to business of figuring this all out, but thank you for giving us some time.
I appreciate you guys having me, and hope everyone has a good weekend.
Thank Bill for coming on. No question about that, Sean. Great to get him and to really get the update of where we stand, because like you said at the top, I mean, there wasn't a lot of news that came out of the Board of Governors meeting, just a lot of updates and sort of where we are. Now we have the real update for where we stand right now. And I think it's interesting. The league is still pushing for that January 1st date or in and around that date and he's right. I mean, if you're going to push for that date, time is of the essence here. The players got to get to know here. So there's got to be something coming down the pike here soon.
Yeah, you would think. But look, I mean, the other thing you have to look at is there is some variables in when they can start, right? It doesn't have to be January 1st if the numbers don't work. Like, I thought maybe the most important lesson that was learned from the original return to play was the flexibility in waiting, right? If you think back, it was such a long time ago, all those cities that could have been bubble cities, Vegas was a favorite to be a bubble city, you know, and so on and so forth. The Canadian cities, Vancouver was another one, and they just kept waiting and waiting. And everybody was like, why don't they announce it? Why don't they announce it? And you found out later from Steve Mayer and from Bill and from Gary Bettman that they waited because they didn't know what was going to happen. And it ended up Vegas exploded. Vancouver couldn't have them with the medical conditions that they had put on it. And Toronto and Edmonton ended up working perfectly, or as perfectly as you could in those situations. And it's because they were patient and they waited and they didn't commit to something and you know, weigh themselves down and then have to walk back from it. So while we all want to know when training camp starts, we have a big preview package that we're going to have to do and everything else that goes with that. I think waiting is probably the best thing that could happen and probably the biggest lesson that they learned in doing this once already.
Yeah, and understandably, as they wait, I mean, the idea of an 82-game season, that's not happening anymore. We didn't touch on that with Bill, but that doesn't seem realistic at this point. So you're looking at fewer games, and we've seen the league play 2 48-game seasons. It happened in 1995. It happened in 2013. I mean, it's happened before. Those were lockout seasons, but it can be done, and it didn't negatively impact who won the Stanley Cup that year. I think they still were able to play a full playoffs. But, you know, I thought it was interesting, you know, the discussion that they're having between, you know, hub cities, pods, if you will, versus playing in arena. And of course, every team's going to want to play in their own arena. However, the schedule would dictate that, you know, whether you're bringing in teams to play, you know, 3 and 4 nights, sort of like a baseball schedule, right? Where you play a series or not, you know, can you do that? But I think with cases going up, you have to look at the safety elements of this. And so teams may want that in arena, but it seemed to me in listening to Bill, there's a real push here, I think, for, you know, if I could read between the lines here, of trying to talk more about what these hub cities or the pods would be like and how it would look, because it is the safer way to go. It's the safer play.
Yeah, maybe. I still think there's an appetite for doing it in arena. And I think, you know, football has shown that, you know, with the right protocols, you can make that happen. You're going to have to be flexible. You might have to have a little bit more of an expanded roster. You know, you might have to move some games now and then. But I think there's a real economic part that comes to this, right? If you go into a bubble, you're only really honoring one team, if any team's commitment says, you know, and selfishly, who wouldn't love to see, you know, a rival go into another team's barn, right? You know, now Dallas and Colorado, and have them play three games in four nights and let that vitriol.
Yeah,
vitriol would be the good word. Let that build up, you know. It reminds me a lot of, as a kid, you know, in the AHL, when they would play three and four, and you would have teams come in, and you know, it would be like a Providence Hartford playing a home and home. And by the second period of that second game, it was just complete chaos because everybody was riled up, and all the grievances from the first game carried over to the second game, now carry over to the third game. it would be phenomenal. I don't think it's a business model that works in the long term, but I think in, you know, these unusual times, I think it would be something that would certainly juice the game, right? And you want coverage. So you have that wild first game, and then everybody's talking about, and hey, guess what? They play again in 24 hours. Make sure you tune in. So, you know, I think that could work. I think the football model has shown that, but I think it requires a lot of creativity and a lot of patience.
Thing is, with the football models, you're talking about one game, right? You're talking about one game a week, and you can't do that, obviously, in this model. I mean, you're going to have a condensed schedule. It is, even if it's 48 games or 52 games or 60 games, whatever it may be. So the football model works because the team can fly in on a Saturday or even game day if need be. We've seen that. But let's just say if they're playing on a Sunday, they fly in on a Saturday and they leave Sunday night, and that's it. But the travel around, you know, with the NHL schedule is obviously a little bit different. So I understand what Bill's saying in terms of, you know, the safer model. But I get the economics of it. There's no question about it. He didn't answer. He wasn't able to answer. And we got to thank Bill because his time is so short. He's pulled in so many different directions. So he didn't get to the second question I asked of the last question, the reality of an all-Canadian division. But there's realignment possibility here because of the border issues. And I got to tell you, Sean, like, if it's a one-off, I think it would be a lot of fun. I think it would be great to have an all-Canadian division just for a one-off, nothing permanent. But if we get that, I think all of Canada, you know, I mean, I think it would be the buzz for that would be just terrific throughout all of Canada.
Oh, it'd be unbelievable. And especially when you think of the state of the Canadian teams, right? You got Toronto, who, you know, whether you agree with it or not, a lot of people think that, you know, they're at the best place they've been in a long time. Montreal showed they're on their way up, had a strong offseason. Ottawa, you know, they're at the bottom, but they added a lot of guys, and they have a lot of young talent you want to watch. Vancouver's on the rise. Winnipeg might have been the best team in Canada last year, at the start of last year, you know, and they still have the best goalie. You know, so you have all those teams, and then you have Calgary, who's, you know, Calgary and Edmonton, who each are looking to kind of do a little bit better than they did in the playoffs last year. I think you have the makings of a really competitive division. And if I was, you know, one of the odds makers in Vegas, I don't know that I would want to draw the duty of trying to decide who's the favorite in that division, if it comes to pass.
And it also a question of where they would be playing a lot of those games, because there's could be a lot of cross country travel there. So again, it's another question that's got to get answered, but get answered in the short term here. I mean, because if January 1st is what we're looking at, or in and around that date, then we're going to have to get to know here pretty soon. And I actually wonder, and you tell me your opinion. We didn't ask Bill this, but the NBA announced that it's starting December 22nd, right? Do you think that adds an element of pressure to the NHL at all to get their season underway in a similar time frame, if it's a week or two after? I don't know if it does. I think, you know, the league has to consider what is best for the league, but I do wonder if there's an external pressure there.
I don't think so. I honestly, like, what would that pressure be, that they're going to steal the market? I don't think that's happening now. You know, I think everybody's viewing habits have been skewed to such a degree that, you know, if it's on TV, people are going to watch it. And you know, there's enough windows now to build what you need to build. I think everybody's kind of learned that you do what you need to do, right? You even look at college football. You know, the SEC started early. They were committed the whole time to do it. The Big Ten wasn't going to play football. And then, you know, they decided, they looked at the model and they saw that it worked and they changed some things. And you know, the division, you know, better than anybody else, the Pac-12 did the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they looked at it and their protocols are more stringent than maybe anybody in football. And they've run into some problems because of it. I think that's what you need to do, right? You need to figure out what's best for your constituency. And you know, I think Bill did answer this. He we can't be pressured. We need to make the right decision. There can't be external pressure. You can't look at what other people are doing and say, I need to do that because they did it. Because who knows? Maybe the NBA starts when they start and they run into a brick wall in the first couple of weeks. And then, you know, you come out of it and you're on the other side of it. And then it's not nearly as bad as it could have been if you started right after it. So I don't believe that there's an external pressure, but that's just my reading of it.
No, I tend to agree with you there. I just wanted to throw it out there to see what your opinion is, you know, would be of it. But I tend to agree. There can't be an external pressure on that, because you have to do what's best for you. You can't worry about what other people are doing. You have to do what's best for you. You know, but I also think the flexibility of it is important too. And Bill hinted at that, right? I mean, the model they start with might not be the model they finish with. We've heard that from the commissioner, Gary Bettman, about fans in the stand. You may start with no fans in the stand, and by the end of it, you might have fans in the stand. It could go by market based on, you know, protocols and regulations, government regulations and whatnot. So there's something to be said there for the flexibility of the model that they are putting together, which right now, Sean, adds, you know, it adds another layer that makes this even a greater challenge for the people putting this together, because you need to build that flexibility into this.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, that's happening now, right?
Yeah.
You look at the NFL and you watch one game and there's nobody in the stands. You know, you watch the Patriots or the Giants and there's nobody in the stands. And then, you know, you watch the game last night, Thursday night in Nashville, and there's quite a few people there. You know, it's not a sold out stadium, but there's thousands of people there. And there's that flexibility, right? You watch college football games in Florida, or, oh my God, the thing that gave
Notre Dame,
the heebie-jeebies, it's been so long, and I'm a pretty big Notre Dame fan, was Notre Dame beating Clemson, and then all of a sudden there's, you know, 3,000, it seemed like 30,000 because we're not used to crowds anymore, but 3,000 people on the field, and you know, I was watching that game with my son, and the first thing we said to each other was, they're not going to play BC next week. It's over, right? And what Notre Dame had to do coming out of that is pretty much tell the whole student body that they would not be allowed to register for classes in the spring unless they had a COVID test before they go home. Like, that's how serious that was.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be market to market, and it's going to put some teams at an economic advantage, I think. But again, those are all things that are going to be figured out. I don't think we're talking about gates that are big enough to make or break anybody at this point until, you know, the vaccine comes. And if it does, and you know, they're talking about in the springtime, and you know, it can get distributed. But I think that even goes into next season.
I mean, we'll see what happens. But there's still a lot to come out, and you know, maybe by the time we do our next podcast, we'll have some hard news on this. You know, but let's move on. We definitely want to. We teased it at the top before we got to Bill. We were able to catch up with Brandon Saad, new member of the Colorado Avalanche, before. Before we started this, we did that earlier in the week. So here is that interview with Brandon Saad. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us. How are you? I mean, how's your off season in November right now?
I'm doing well. It's a little crazy, obviously. I'm not used to being home in the fall. But it's good. You know, it is what it is. It's nice to be with family. I have a little bit of downtime, and you just enjoy having an off season in the fall. Like you said, it's a little bit change of pace.
What's been the most unusual thing that you've missed? I mean, Dan and I have been involved in the business, you know, for a long time, and I've never really been home full time in November either. But for a player, you know, once that season gets going and you're fully ensconced in what you're doing, what's kind of the fall thing that you've been able to enjoy that you've missed for the past however many years?
Well, I think it's a lot of things. You know, it's kind of a learning process too, where I've been gone so long, and I have a little son, so just even going doing things like pumpkin and apple picking, or now being able to be home for Thanksgiving coming up here shortly, just things that you're allowed to be with the family a little bit more when you're used to being on the road and kind of calling in and missing those types of events.
Where are you right now? So where is the off-season home for you?
So Pittsburgh's home for me. I'm in Pittsburgh right now.
And have you done anything in terms of, we'll get into the trade and all that, have you done anything in terms of property sales and property purchases, Chicago and Denver?
Yeah. So when the trade happened, I went out to Denver there for probably a week or so after the trade to look at some things. And then about a week after that, I was going to Chicago to kind of do the same thing, get the house ready and prep to get on the market. So yeah, it's been a whirlwind of a month, but kind of been through it before, so I'm used to it.
What were those first impressions of Denver as a player? You know, you fly in, you fly out, you take that really long ride from the airport to the arena and then back out, but that's all you, as a player, when you go to a lot of these cities, that's all you see, maybe a restaurant the night before. What were your first impressions of Denver when you spent the week there?
Yeah, it was beautiful. I've always heard good things, and being able to go there and have a few days and being able to look at some property, see the neighborhoods, see where the rinks are at, and then had some time too to kind of do some hiking and kind of see some mountain views. So it's a beautiful city. It's nice to be out there, and I'm looking forward to getting the season going because we have a hell of a team there in Denver.
Yeah, there's no question, Brandon. That's where I wanted to go. I mean, you're traded from a team that you know very well, two-time Stanley Cup champion, but a team that, you know, has admitted it's going to go into some type of rebuild here. And here you go, your move to a team that I believe is primed to go win a Stanley Cup because of the depth and the talent that's there, and now the experience that's there too. So what does this do for you? What kind of impact do you think this has on you now going from Chicago to Colorado?
Well, I think just the excitement level's through the roof just to get another chance to win another Stanley Cup. You know, I love my time in Chicago. It's a great city and a great organization. But like you said, we're kind of not really cup contenders. So, you know, getting traded to a team that every year you play against, you're like, wow, this team has a chance to win every year. And now to be a part of that team, it's like it's a jolt of rejuvenation, really, to go to a city and a great team. I'm just excited to hopefully get a chance to win another championship because having gone through that before, that's what hockey is all about, to play in those big moments, playing those playoff games and get another championship.
What is it that you think you bring to the Avalanche? I mean, you just spoke a little bit about winning championships, and it's always so hard to quantify what that is for a player when he goes to another team to try and bring that along. But what do you think you bring to this team that clearly you've seen play and know is an elite team at this point?
I think just experience, you know, having gone through it where it's being calm in certain situations. Obviously, they have a great, talented team. But for me, it's just being myself and playing my game. I think I've always tried to do that, where being on the ice, trying to get pucks to the net, use my speed, getting pucks and bodies to the net, that's always kind of been my style of play. They obviously have a talented team, so I'm looking forward to playing with some great players there.
Yeah, and you're used to playing with guys who are, you know, the elite of their, you know, positions. Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, and here you go, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar. I mean, we can go on down the list. So does it make your transition easier because you are used to, you know, being with these types of players and meshing and getting chemistry with these types of players?
I think so. Yeah, I think anytime you can kind of draw on your experiences, it helps. And like you said, I've been a part of some great teams with some great players. So for me, I'm kind of used to that. And that's where I like to be and like to play. Obviously, who doesn't like to win and play with some all-stars? So it's a great opportunity for me. I'm very excited to be joining them. And I'm definitely feel comfortable with that situation.
Do you see many similarities between the Colorado team you're joining and the Chicago team you joined in 2012?
Yeah, I think it's similar. And I mean, the amount of talent they have and how young they are, I think those are big similarities. I mean, as far as style of play goes, teams have a little bit different style of play, but just the raw talent and the age of the team is definitely very similar. So those are two main points I see for sure.
One thing about you, Brandon, about your game that I like is you seem to be able to mesh regardless who the center is, regardless of who you're playing with. So I wanted to take me through it. If you're playing with Nathan MacKinnon, what's that impact on you? If you're playing with Nazem Kadri, how does that impact your game? So how do you, does your style have to change at all if you're playing with either one of these guys?
No, I think that's what I try to do, is just be myself. You know, it's something where I could always play up and down the lineup because of that reason, where, I don't know, sometimes you get young guys that come in and play with Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane, and you always want to get them the puck. And I did that too early on in my career. But I think as you get older, you kind of learn how sometimes you could hold on to it for an extra second, let plays develop, then get the guy the puck. So that's certain things like that where you kind of feel comfortable, and kind of had that attitude wherever I'm at in the lineup. And I mean, with Colorado's depth, it's really, you can fit in with some all-stars anywhere you're at in the lineup. So I just try to stick to my game and be myself. And I think that helps them read off of me as well.
Have you had discussions with the coaching staff and with management about, you know, what your role be and what the expectations are yet? Or does that come closer to training camp?
Yeah, I think that'll come closer to training camp. I mean, I've talked to everyone on the staff, but it was more just about, we're happy to have you, things like that. Welcome to the team and the city. And if you need anything, let us know. But as far as lineup and things like that, I'm sure that's going to be touched upon more towards training camp.
Were you prepared to be traded? Did you think you would be?
You know, to be honest, it was yes and no. You know, I was a little bit surprised that it happened this year compared to during the season or next year. But after the season, I felt pretty good. And then you see things like that happen with Crawford and kind of where the Blackhawks are trending, and you realize it's your last year of your deal. And then after talking with my agent, he's like, it's a possibility because teams want you. So it's really a matter at that point whether if Stan wanted to move me or not. So I was kind of coming to terms with it about a week or so before it actually happened, and figured it's going to be a reality.
Obviously, you've moved on and you've gone to Colorado, but you have a lot of roots in Chicago. As you look at what they're trying to do and how they're trying to almost reinvent themselves on the fly, what do you think about what's happening in Chicago right now?
Well, it's tough. You know, I've kind of been part of the ups and downs there with winning, and then over the past few seasons, missing the playoffs, and last year we squeezed into the bubble. But it's a different dynamic. You know, when I went in, I was a 20-year-old with a bunch of guys with families and older guys, and there was only a few young guys, and now it's the opposite. You know, I remember last year when going to games on your bus, and there's only a few older guys compared to young guys now. But I think the amount of talent and youth that they have on that team, it's only a matter of time before they break through. So I think they're heading in the right direction. I know playing with those young guys, they all have a good head on their shoulders and are driven to winning and enjoy playing a game of hockey. So when you have that culture, it's only going to breed good things.
Have you had any discussions? Is an extension in the offing here? Have you had any discussions with the Avalanche regarding an extension, or is that more of like a wait and see approach, see how it all fits and works out?
Yeah. We haven't had any discussions. I think it's a bit early, especially with not really knowing what's going on with the season and all that. But for me, I know thinking about it, Colorado's always been in my top because I want to win again. So to be in a great spot like that and a great team, and then you hear wonders about the city. So really, it seems like a great place where I'd want to play for a long time. So I think it's just kind of feeling out process, making sure I'm in love with it. And obviously, they have to want me for a long period of time. But it's definitely somewhere I can see myself playing out my career.
What is we talked about it a little at the beginning of this interview, but more specifically, you know, in the actual execution of training camp, you know, you have, especially in Chicago, really short off seasons until very recently. This has been an extended one. There's, you know, everybody's hoping we start on January 1st and camps open in the middle of December. But what has it been like just trying to execute, getting yourself ready for an indeterminate date to be ready to play hockey?
Yeah, I think that mentally is the hard part. You know, it's kind of like with life right now where you don't have a set plan in place, where things are changing daily and it's a different routine for you. So it's tough. I think mentally just try to stay sharp. Your training and skating, staying in shape. But like you said, you don't really have, you kind of have an end in sight, but it's not set in stone yet. So you're kind of, I don't know, you're kind of hesitant to get into that mentality when it could get pushed back, and then you're kind of resetting and wasting that energy in places you don't want to. So I think just enjoying the time you have, the extended off season, making sure your body's healthy, ready to go. And then when that time comes, kind of just ramping it up into that gear and getting ready. But when you're in shape and you're skating and working out like I am, it's kind of, you're kind of just in cruise control until you need to ramp it up when you know when it's going to happen.
Has that required, I mean, a constant schedule adjustment then too? Or, I mean, did you even have a schedule? It's so strange, right? I mean, because you normally you'll go in and you'll have a plan in place, a goal in mind for when you're going to report to camp, what you want to be like. So have you had to constantly adjust your goals, your schedule? How's that worked in terms of just normal training?
Yeah, I think it's kind of been on the fly. You know, it's something where it's not as regimented as it was when you kind of have a set date. It was kind of the same process going into the playoff bubble, though, where we didn't really know when I was going to start at first. And you're kind of, okay, you're going to take some time off. You're going to heal the body. You're going to kind of get into it slowly and fine tune some things and work on things you want to work on. And then kind of ramp it up when you get into the thick of things. So I think that kind of helps out with the situation we're in right now, because it's pretty similar. So yeah, it's just kind of been on the fly and learning to adapt to it.
Are you working out with other Pittsburgh-based guys, or are you working out on your own? And if you are working out with other NHL guys, what's kind of the conversation been like?
Yeah, I've been working out on my own, actually. I've been fortunate enough to put in a gym here and kind of do things at home. And then I've been skating with some Pittsburgh guys, with JT Miller, and then a few other just local guys that aren't in the NHL, but that have been a part of skates. And it hasn't been so much. It's kind of the same thought process for everyone, where it's a bit of a waiting game, and you just try and do your best to stay in shape and enjoy the game right now, and hopefully we can get things started up as soon as possible.
Got to ask you, because we just hit the Pittsburgh angle, and I know you were born, this is the last one for me, but I know you were born after the Penguins won their cup in 92. Because you're a Pittsburgher, what influence, this is a change of pace from what we were just talking about, what influence did the Penguins have on you in terms of hockey, Lemieux and Jágr? And you weren't around for those two cups, but, you know, just growing up within that environment, I wanted to ask you this question because you're such an entrenched Pittsburgh guy. So what influence did they have on you, and describe it if you could?
Yeah, I think, like you said, I was born kind of right after they won that second cup. And while it might not have been directly being old enough to watch what they did, just the things they've done for the city and the excitement in the city. I know my cousins were into hockey because of it. I got into hockey because of it. And then with Lemieux taking over the team, and you see guys like Crosby and Malkin came in, I think I was only 12-ish around there when they came in. So I was still a fan of Pittsburgh and the Penguins, and watching those guys, and they went on to win cups. And it's just been amazing to see what kind of Lemieux and Jágr and those guys set out for the city and how it developed. And just growing up playing hockey, and there's only certain rinks you can go to, and now there's rinks with multiple ice sheets, and it's, the buzz is just incredible in Pittsburgh with hockey right now. So it's nice to see.
You know, you mentioned you skate with JT. I would assume you've done that for a little while. You know him pretty well. Kind of a breakout year last year. What do you see from him, and what his future holds?
Yeah, I think I know just from skating him in the past, I've always thought he was a great player. And it's kind of roles you're put into, and he found a great place there in Vancouver with getting big minutes and being on the power play. And I think he's always kind of had that work ethic and talent. So it was only a matter of time for him to break through, and he found a good setup. So for me, I mean, I think all good things about the guy. You know, I know being from Pittsburgh, kind of always thinking he was a great player, and now to see him have that success that he had, and then get that extra confidence, I think the sky's the limit for a guy like that. So it's nice to see, for sure.
Well, I think the sky's the limit for your new team too. So Brandon, thanks so much for hopping on with us for a little bit here, and can't wait to see you in an Avalanche jersey, man.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Great to get Brandon Saad on and his perspective in the move to Colorado. Obviously very excited, Sean, as he should be, because that is a very good team that he is joining, and he's coming from a rebuilding team. So good for him. A couple of news and notes since our last podcast. We had, you know, stuff that's happened since the last time we had one of these. Obviously, the passing of Alex Trebek, the longtime host of Jeopardy, University of Ottawa grad, you know, recipient of the Order of Canada, huge hockey fan, a great ambassador for the game of hockey, Sean, and even part of the NHL draft this year. So passing of Alex Trebek, that was not good, but what a life that man led, huh?
Yeah, no, fantastic. And a huge sports fan. It wasn't just hockey. He loved all sports. And it was always fun to see, you know, we watch a lot of Jeopardy here at the house. And it was always fun whenever they had any kind of sports category to kind of see him, you know, cringes some people who are very smart but yes, know very little yes. about sports. It's the opposite of me. I know a lot about sports, but I'm not very smart otherwise, I guess. To kind of see them, you know, kind of cringe and see him cringe as they kind of tried to find their way through stuff that we would consider very simple as sports fans. But fantastic. And I thought, you know, his announcing of the Ottawa draft pick in this year's draft, which was, you know, completely different from any draft that we've ever done because of COVID, was perfect. And the people who thought of that and Alex's presentation of it was just, it was one of the highlights of the draft.
Yeah. And condolences to his family. No question about it, but I got to tell you, Sean, you tell me when I'm watching Jeopardy, if there's a sports category and I get one wrong, I get mad at myself. Every other category, I celebrate a win if I get one right. But if I get one wrong in a sports category, I'm mad at myself. Are you the same way?
No, I don't have to be because my wife says, what's the matter with you? You should know that. So I'm some sort of idiot savant when it comes to sports, but probably because all the statistics I used to know when I was younger. They're not on enough for me to really worry that much about it.
If I get like an English literature category correct, I mean, I'm dancing. I'm excited for myself. Anyway, another very interesting announcement from the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I think a really cool announcement from them is they just decided that the class of 2020 will become the class of 2021. Marian Hossa, Jerome McGinley, Kevin Lowe, Doug Wilson, Kim St. Pierre, Ken Holland, and because of COVID, obviously they're not doing inductions. The inductions would be right around this time. So they're not doing the inductions this year. They're just going to transfer the class of 2020 to the class of 2021. And that's the class that will be inducted next year. So if you were ready to be inducted in 2021, if you were eligible, moving to 2022, that's just the way it's going to be. And I like that. They still all get their weekend, which they richly deserve.
Oh, for sure. And look, you know, we're doing this on Friday and today would actually be the ring ceremony where the inductees get their rings and they do it in the Great Hall. One of my favorite things to cover. We were there last year, you know, when this happened and to hear the stories and the questions and answers and, you know, all the things that go into that. And then as the weekend goes along, you have the game that the Maple Leafs play traditionally on that Friday as well. And then you have the old timers game and, you know, everything else that goes into it. And then the speeches to wrap the whole thing up. Just a wonderful celebration of hockey. And I think if you did a class of 2021 and you combine them, you know, nobody would get what they deserve, right? Either that or the speeches, my God, we would be listening to them for 3 days. You know, so I think this is a perfect way to honor everybody. Everybody gets their moment in the spotlight. And when you get elected to the Hall of Fame, you've earned that moment and nothing should take it away. So I think it was the best thing they could possibly do.
Yeah. An induction ceremony would have been Monday night in Toronto. And I agree with you, Sean, it's one of my highlight events of the year to be able to go do that. It was the first event I ever covered for NHL.com on the road, the 2007 inductions. And I've been there almost every year since. And I just love it. I mean, it's just a great, rich hockey history, tradition. Everybody's in a good mood. It's a lot of fun. So I look forward to hopefully getting back there in November of 2021 for this class. Again, Marian Hossa, Jerome McGinley, Kevin Lowe, Doug Wilson, Kim St. Pierre, and Ken Holland. One last thing, we're doing it right now on NHL.com. So a little tease for us on .com. The best players at their position in the next 3 years, the centers just went up. So who will be the best center in the National Hockey League 3 years from now? My pick, and maybe controversially, Nathan MacKinnon instead of the obvious Connor McDavid. But I just think Nathan MacKinnon is the most well-rounded player right now. Probably the most well-rounded player in the league right now, considering his age, the speed, the power, the ability to do just about everything, and now the experience and being on a good team. Where do you land on that?
Well, I don't want to go with the chalk pick if you're not going to go with the chalk pick.
I mean, look, it's an obvious pick, Connor McDavid. It is, but I'm looking at, I think 3 years from now, Nathan MacKinnon might have two Stanley Cup rings, at least one, maybe. I mean, it's possible, and yeah. I just don't see that for McDavid.
Yeah, no, and that's why if I had to pick and I'm throwing McDavid out of the equation, it's Braden Point for me.
Okay.
You know, they might
he's come got back one already.
And, yeah, they might come back and win another one and, you know, talk about a cast of characters around them. You know, I don't see them falling off the cliff anytime soon. So, you know, the reason that we did this and the roundtables that we do is because NHL Network is doing their top players at each position. That's something they do each offseason. Normally it's in the summer and we go to NHL Network and we do a roundtable on air with NHL.com personnel, but none of that's possible because of COVID. And so we've decided to kind of look 3 years forward, and at the center position, you know, they're so young that the 3 years doesn't really matter. You're talking about guys that are in their prime. Some of the other ones have been more interesting. Like when you look at the defensemen, right. And you think about, you know, the stalwarts that are there now, and look, Roman Josi's still going to be around and, yep, and those kind of guys are still going to be around, but some of these young players that are coming up, and it was a really interesting exercise to kind of figure out, you know, Seth Jones is kind of one of those middle guys, is what's he going to do? But you know, could Quinn Hughes be the best defenseman in the league in 3 years? I say he could. You know, the same thing with Cale Makar in Colorado, whoever you want to throw into that mix. So, you know, as we wait to figure out when we're going to start and we can build towards that, these have been some really fun exercises to do to think about what the future looks like when everything gets back to normal.
Yeah, no question about it. And maybe by the time we do a next podcast, like we said earlier, Sean, maybe we'll have some hard news on when things will be getting up in running here, but this one was the update version, I guess, of that, right? We were able to catch up with Bill Daly, so I'm really happy we were able to get Bill Daly and obviously Brandon Saad, the excited Brandon Saad, and of course Sean, we got to talk, the two of us got to talk as well.
Yeah, we got to catch up a little bit, and it was a long for us, it was a long time between podcasts. It wasn't that long in the grand scheme of things, but it was great to get back and talk a little hockey, and hopefully for the listeners to listen to us talk a little bit of hockey, and we get to do it again soon, and like you said, hopefully talk about what's going to be happening on the ice next season.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be more news ahead. And until then, everybody stay safe out there.